FM Bogotan, and you are listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville.
Programming support is brought to you by our contributing listeners and Moon IO Media, celebrating the 15th year of the onhaywood.com West Asheville printed map. Our thanks go out to all the local businesses that have supported this project over the years. More info at onhaywood.com.
Good morning. You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFMLP 103.3 in Asheville. It's 9 o'clock on Wednesday, April 29th, and you're listening to a new show with special coverage on the coronavirus pandemic as it affects us locally. I'm KP Whaley, Asheville FM's general manager, and I thank you for joining us. This coverage is an extension of the Asheville FM News Hour, and views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM. For questions, feedback, story suggestions, and more, please email us at news@ashevillefm.org or find us on Facebook at Asheville FM. As an essential service, Asheville FM is here, and we intend to continue serving our community with news and information about what's happening, as well as with music and other programming to help comfort in this time of crisis. We've put in place a bunch of safeguards to protect and keep our volunteer DJs and hosts safe, and so our programming has changed to allow most of those DJs to produce their shows from home and still have some of our shows live in studio, like this one, to keep you up to date on the latest news and breaking information that's impacting our community. You can check out our programming schedule at ashevillefm.org to find your favorite show, which may have moved, and we still have most of our shows that you love, plus some new ones like this. We've expanded our Spanish language news and information. We added a story time for children and meditation programs as well. A whole lot more going on here at Asheville FM. And again, you can check out that programming schedule at ashevillefm.org. Well, now that school is officially being continued in a remote learning situation for the remainder of the school year, today we're going to look at what that actually means for us all. I have two guests this hour, Michelle Vruink of the Franklin School of Innovation and Brady Roachford of the Francine Delaney New School for Children. And we're going to be talking about shifting to online classes, keeping students engaged during the pandemic, and what parents can do to help continue learning in a time of social distancing. All of that's coming up in this hour, plus the latest news on the pandemic. And for that, we'll go to our friends at Carolina Public Press.
This is Stephanie Carson with Carolina Public Press reporting for Asheville FM. And with your daily coronavirus update for Tuesday, April 28th. More than 400 additional confirmed cases of new coronavirus infections in North Carolina residents Tuesday pushed the statewide case total to nearly 9,600, according to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. The new cases are part of nearly 3,000 additional test results reported since Monday, with more than 112,000 tests completed on North Carolina residents in total. Deaths from known coronavirus-related illness also increased substantially by 36 Tuesday to a total of 342 statewide. However, hospitalizations dropped off slightly and now stand at 463. A key part of both the increase in cases and deaths is coming from congregate living settings, where the infection spreads easily. Nursing homes are essentially hard hit because they're aging, and often sickly residents do not fare well with COVID-19. In North Carolina, 87% of deaths from the illness are in those 65 years old and older, even though they account for just 24% of cases. Congregate cases are also driving several of the most rapidly growing county outbreaks, though some urban counties have outbreaks that are not related to congregate settings. Carolina Public Press reported Tuesday morning on newly available details of major outbreaks at long-term care facilities. CPP was also part of a legal coalition that pressured the state to release this information, which DHHS agreed to do on Monday. The North Carolina General Assembly begins its session this week, but a joint report from CPP and Coastal Review Online on Tuesday showed that leaders do not expect a return to the same issues that led to a tense budget impasse last year. Instead, the economy and tax revenues are spiraling due to the pandemic, with less money to spend and thus no argument about where it should go. Lawmakers are expected to focus on responding to the pandemic and shoring up the economy. You can find this story and more information related to the coronavirus in North Carolina by going to carolinapublicpress.org. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
And thanks for to the Carolina Public Press for that partnership in getting you the latest information. We do that is yesterday's update, but we do a daily update at 4 o'clock. So tune in for that moving forward through this. Again, you're listening to Asheville FM at WSFMLP 103.3 in Asheville. I'm KP Whaley, and this is the fifth week of stay-at-home order. And you're listening to a new show about the coronavirus pandemic and its impacts locally. Today, we're going to be talking about the impact that the stay-at-home order is having on education. On Friday, Governor Cooper announced that the North Carolina K-12 public schools will continue remote learning through the end of the 19-20 school year. And although Cooper acknowledged that the decision was the right thing to do to protect us students, teachers, and communities, it has made it very difficult at the same time for many of the children and parents. So this hour, I'm really pleased to welcome my guests, Michelle Vruwink and Brady Rochford. Brady Rochford is a teaching member of the Francine Delaney Executive Council. She began her teaching career in Raleigh, North Carolina, after graduating from NC State, and she continued on with her master's degree from App State. Brady, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us, KP.
You bet. And prior to joining the Franklin School of Innovation as the executive director, Michelle Vruwink was the co-founder and director of Arroyo Research Services, a national education research and evaluation firm focused on helping its clients achieve academic excellence through data-driven decision-making. Michelle, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much. And again, thanks for having us today.
Yeah, you bet. So I'd like to begin by kind of going back to early March. We were all just sort of beginning to see the pandemic hit our country and parts of the state. And about a week before the stay-at-home order was issued, it began to look like schools were going to move to, you know, quote-unquote temporarily remote learning situation and keeping children home. Tell us what that week or so was like for you and your staff. Michelle, how quickly was that decision made? How much time did you have to prepare for it and put things in place?
Yeah, I remember that week, which seems so long ago now, is really a roller coaster week. We were, of course, monitoring guidelines from the CDC and getting daily, briefings from the state and trying to stay on top of everything. And it just kept going up or down. I remember being on a call on, I think it was on Thursday that week, thinking like, we're going to close tonight or tomorrow. And then on Friday, on a call with the local health department and with other representatives, feeling like, yeah, we have more time. It's going to be a little while. The CDC is not recommending that schools close right now. And locally, that's the guidance that they're following. And then on Saturday, the governor, of course, made the call. So we definitely were monitoring everything, and we were starting to put in place some plans if we did need to go remote. And so we'd let staff know that that was something that was coming. We surveyed all of our students to find out, you know, who has access to devices at home. Do you have internet access at home? Do you have the things that you're going to need if we do have to move into this remote situation? But it was definitely a roller coaster week, with one day you're thinking like, we're going to be gone tomorrow. And then the next day you're like, no, we're going to be around for a while. So we had a little bit of warning, but it wasn't a lot of time.
Yeah, sounds familiar to our situation here at the radio station as well. Brady, how about you? Francine Delaney, similar?
Yeah, it was definitely kind of a tumultuous time, and we were hovering together. I remember being with the staff, listening to those calls, wondering what was going to happen, and we did a lot of the same things. We surveyed our community to find out who needed computers, who needed help getting internet access, and then we found out on Saturday we were going to not, you know, we weren't going to be returning on Monday, and so teachers had been in the back of their mind for a while already thinking about online platforms and testing those out, and then I think we went into full drive. Some of us over the weekend got started right away, and then everybody on Monday.
Yeah, that's kind of incredible if you think about, you know, you... Teaching, in my opinion, is both an art and a science, right? You you hold yourself to great expectations. You lay out your coursework for the year, and then you follow a path, and you try not to stray too much from that. So overnight, you've had to change your entire, you know, teaching platform at least. How did you set new expectations for what the learning outcomes would be, how you're doing as a teacher? Brady, let's start with you.
Yeah, so over the weekend, some of our staff worked to develop expectations for the staff, and we did it for the first 2 weeks, and then we said, okay, we're going to evaluate these expectations and come back together and decide what is it that we're going to hold ourselves to for the rest of the online learning experience. How many live lessons do we want kids to have? How are we going to hold our community meetings? One thing that's really important at schools is, you know, we're not just teaching academic rigor, we're also teaching how to be a community and how to be together. And so that was a big part of our work and our planning. So we came up with expectations for staff, for students, for teachers, and then it was up to teachers to move forward with the curriculum, with the state standards. And I was supposed to start teaching about the Holocaust. That was my next unit that was coming up. And so I had sent kids home with books on the Holocaust and thought, okay, well, we're already in the belly of the fray with the Holocaust. Let's just keep rolling with it. But then, you know, as time came and it was time to really start that curriculum with the students, it felt too dark and it felt too difficult to be away from the kids and to be studying something that would be emotionally very difficult. Mm-hmm. So I decided to change path, and we went with something else. And, you know, flexibility is the key right now, and innovation and trying to make things work that are engaging and exciting. It's been a journey.
I'll bet. And I'm glad you mentioned the community meetings and that being such an important part of your work at Francine Delaney. And Michelle, I know at Franklin School, you also have great expectations around this socialization. You have a thing called Crew, I think it's called. And yet that is all about social interaction. So tell us about that program and how you made the decision to continue it.
Yeah, that, you know, we were working really quickly. And one thing, we had asked all of our teachers to plan online lessons for that Monday after the day that ended up being the day we were all announced that we were closed. So we had planned that day as a day of practice, and then we post that off. And so we did take that first week that the school was closed, and we asked teachers to just provide lessons for one day that week. So academic lessons only happened one day that week, and it was the lesson that they had already planned. And we were going to do it in person with students so that they could practice, you know, how do we get into these systems? How do we access these things? What is this like with the teachers there to guide them through? So obviously we didn't get that chance to do that in person, but we used that one day practice lesson that week. And that was all we really tried to do academically in that first week of school closures. But we also knew that Crew was going to be something that we needed to have. And Crew is our advisory program. It's really the heart of our school in a lot of ways. We place students in grade level groups. They're paired with a faculty advisor, and these are smaller groups. So if our classes are 20 to 24 kids, crew is, you know, 10 to 14 students. And we are really intentional. These are designed to kind of span across, you know, we serve middle and high school students, and it's very natural for kids to have affinity groups, sort of cliques, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so we are looking to break those up a little bit and to create community across all kinds of different groupings within our school. And then that becomes, you'll often hear students and teachers talk about how their crew is like their family at home. You don't necessarily choose them, but you know they have your back and they know you really well, and you know, and you come to really love them deeply. So we knew that that had to continue in some way. And I think, you know, Brady talked about, you know, having to be innovative and just trying things. We didn't give teachers a huge amount of guidance on that. I just said, do it twice this week. Find a way. Use, you know, we're very Google-based, so use Google Meet or use Zoom if that's better for you. But find a way that kids can come together, interact, and just don't make it too, don't overthink it. Like, just get kids together and say, how are you doing? How's your family doing? And the lessons from crew that week, you know, we made some mistakes. We learned on how you have to like manage and have norms for those online meetings the same way we do when we're in person. But the stories that came out of it, like even in that first week, kids who were celebrating their birthdays and their crews surprised them by singing happy birthday and having a celebration, like how meaningful that is for a student who's turning 13, like that's a big birthday, you know? Mm-hmm. So those kinds of stories coming out of it, to the things that were harder for teachers and yet also really, really highlighted the importance of crew. Kids coming to crew and asking questions or sharing feelings like, my fear is that someone that I love is going to become sick and possibly die. Like, these were real fears that students were experiencing. And so what a wonderful opportunity really to celebrate how important crew is, that they were able to share that in a setting, even now that we're not able to be face-to-face, but still bring those forward and have those feelings validated and be able to talk about them with their peers and with the guidance of an adult. So that's definitely remained part. Some days it's fun. Like Brady said, you know, you need to move out of the dark sometimes. So sometimes kids are just doing really fun things. I've seen teachers using scavenger hunts and challenges. You know, they've been using Google Meet to play on, you know, versions of game shows. And so sometimes it's really fun, but other times it is that place to allow kids to really process some of what they're experiencing right now and to grieve and to mourn through that and then to move forward out of it.
Yeah. I would imagine it's good and bad. You have this ability to connect people virtually, but it doesn't really compare to that physical presence of being there, which is so important, I think, to students and for teachers as well. Brady, how have you maintained that tight connection that students need with their teachers and their learning?
Mm. Well, at the beginning, the first 2 weeks, we did not assign things that were going to be really graded. They weren't going to be assessed. And so we spent the first 2 weeks providing families with a learning menu, and we made sure that on that menu was things to support emotional and physical health. And so we would create videos or have community meetings on Zoom or, like Michelle said, Google Meet for some of us, where we would ask the kids, you know, what makes you feel safe? What are some things that you feel grateful for right now? Where do you find that you are, when do you find that you're feeling anxious? So we try to maintain those conversations digitally. And some kids show up and some kids don't. And it varies. So keeping those lines of communication open, providing those spaces that feel safe. I think our staff has, and all teachers probably, have put that connection, that emotional support above the academic rigor right now, mm-hmm. although, you know, that's important too. So I'm holding community meetings. We're doing it. I have a team of three teachers. We're doing it three times a week. We're using Flipgrid, and we put something out to the kids, and then the kids respond, and then the kids can respond to one another. And then I'm holding two live meetings a week with my eighth grade class on Google Meet so that we can come together and talk. And yesterday when we came together, we were going to talk about the book we're reading, but it turned into a conversation about their fear about going to high school.
Mm-hmm.
So we just try to create space and time to be present and to keep it as positive and supportive as possible.
Yeah. I'm interested in more on that community meeting aspect and getting parents involved. And I will go there in just a moment. But I want to remind folks, if you're just tuning in, that you're listening to a new show on the local impact of the coronavirus pandemic here. Today we're talking about education, and our guests are Brady Roachford, teaching member of Francine Delaney's executive council and teacher there, as well as Michelle Vruwink, of the executive director of the Franklin School of Innovation, both here in Asheville. And Brady, I'm sure that some struggles have happened as you've navigated through the new sort of learning realm. And we've heard a lot about children simply not showing up. And you mentioned the community meetings. And I'm wondering if parents are also not showing up and how that contributes to maybe a struggle in this realm.
Yeah, well, I guess first I'd like to say that most parents are showing up. And I think that most parents are doing the best that they can. I want to say thank you to our community first and foremost, because they have been gracious and kind to us. And I just hope that they are also being gracious and kind to themselves, because this is uncharted territory. And I am a teacher and I am a mom. And so I'm also trying to homeschool my own son as mm-hmm. I'm teaching. So for the most part, I think that our community and the way that we have galvanized is really beautiful. I do think that it's hard for parents when you have multiple kids and you are trying to work. Maybe you get the privilege of working from home, but maybe you don't. And you have to, you're an essential worker and you have to leave for the day, and you're shifting your kid around to have adequate childcare. And the stress of that, I think, would be immense. I think what I've been hearing from parents is that they're feeling a little inundated with emails from teachers. And I can see how receiving these emails and sort of combing through them to find what's important is challenging and difficult. I think they're feeling overwhelmed with the responsibility of making sure that their kid, that their child does all of the tasks. And so as an educator, I want to tell parents a statement that a colleague told me once that I say a lot, and it really is helpful, but we have to be gentle on ourselves right now, because if we become emotionally elevated and stressed out, nobody's going to benefit.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. So for the most part, parents are showing up. We have parents who are not only showing up for their children and helping us help their child. We also have parents who are showing up for our community by donating Ingles food cards and leaving them at the school so that we can help provide families with food.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the year, I think we will have given out $12,000 of Ingles food cards. And food insecurity is only going to grow through this pandemic.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, and I definitely want to get there and talk about sort of the divide and equity of this mm-hmm. Situation. But Michelle, what about you? What's the participation like with students either showing up or not, and parents as well?
Yeah, I want to echo a little bit of what Brady said. I think overall our community has responded with amazing resilience and a lot of graciousness. you know, as we go through this, being patient with us as we try different things. And we, early on, we did a survey after about a week and a half of online learning. We surveyed all students, all teachers, and all parents. And we had really high response rate. And so using that to help us improve how we were doing lessons and how we were responding overall. We've also been calling all of our families, and so that's given us that one-to-one feedback and opportunity to just hear from people. And I wanted to emphasize the importance of our counselors through this as well. We are really fortunate to have just amazing counseling staff. We have a middle school counselor and a high school counselor and a college counselor, and all three of them are still available to families. They've put up pages on the website with resources, and they're available by phone and to do sessions through this period, and they're really staying in touch. And then we took some of our other staff in the programs that we were no longer using. So we have staff for our after-school program or our bus drivers or people that no longer really had an active role. And we've reassigned them in areas that aligned with their strengths. And so we've got this great safety net where we're reaching out if we lose track of a student for a little while, if they haven't come to crew or they haven't come to a lesson or they haven't checked in. Then we've got folks who are reaching out to family members and to students and just checking in to see how they're doing. And so I think all of those things, combined with just the fact that our teachers really build strong relationships, we've been monitoring our participation, and well over 80% of our kids are showing up, and they're doing assignments, they're doing work, they're even doing things that they don't have to do any longer. We have seniors. We do a senior project at school, and many schools have moved away from these, but we think it's such an amazing opportunity for kids to get skills and things that are not just purely academic, but they're learning really how to be adults and navigate the world. And so our students don't have to do those senior projects. It's very clear that that is not a graduation requirement, and so our seniors could just quit. And they're not. They're still completing them. They're doing presentations to all of us. And so I think overall, you know, we have a small percentage of kids who are not, they're letting us know, like, we just can't do the work right now. But as long as we know where they are and we know that they're okay and we're supporting them in some way, you know, the individual situations, yes, academic learning is important, but really difficult to do if you're babysitting for, you know, other family members or you're working more. We have kids who are working a lot outside of the home right now, or you've moved to live with another family member and you're actually now in another state and you're trying to continue to do virtual learning connected back here in Asheville. So I think that, you know, just really trying to stay in touch with those folks who have those kinds of more challenging situations and continuing to give that message, like, do the best you can, and that's enough. That's what we want from you right now, and we're here to support in every way. So, yeah, I think just really trying to stay in touch with people and do a lot of outreach and yet trying to minimize, because I do agree with Brady that it's a lot of communication for parents, and we know that this is such a new situation for them. So I have lots of respect and appreciation for our families.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like what a lot of businesses are going through right now, in a way, you know, making sure that people stay connected, making sure you, you know, give yourself a little bit of room to breathe and realize that we're working in this new realm. And I think I'll take a quick break here. This would be a good point to stop. If you're just tuning in, now that a school is officially in remote learning for the remainder of the year, today we're looking at what that actually means for teachers and students and families. I have two guests this hour, Michelle Vruwink of the Franklin School of Innovation and Brady Roachford of Francine Delaney New School for Children. And we're talking about the shift to online classes, keeping students engaged during the pandemic, and what parents can do to help continue learning in this time of social distancing. And we've been talking about what it's been like to kind of get in this position that we are. And now I kind of want to shift this conversation into, you know, this is our new reality, at least for the rest of this year and maybe parts of next as well. And so I'd like to move the conversation there next. But I'll just take a quick minute for some music and announcements, and then I'll come back and we'll explore that, what it's going to be like for seniors who are finishing out their final year of classes, and what it's going to be like for the remainder of the school year for learning as well as for socialization. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this quick music break.
It was 40 or 50 years ago, a big shot played with time. Mr. Walker held the dough, and both kept court in line. Watched and checked on every single day, building his own special cause, his very special way. Ooh, the new soft shoe. Ooh, the new soft shoe. And then walking through a southern mall, I saw a shoe shine stand. A man was talking to a crowd, holding slippers in his hand. Don't you know the same thing happens each and every day?
I want to remind folks that programming support is brought to you by the Lazy Diamond, located at 98 North Lexington in downtown Asheville. The Lazy Diamond is a neighborhood dive bar currently closed. Check Lazy Diamond on Facebook for updates. Youth Outright is a youth advocacy and leadership organization dedicated to providing affirmation, information, support, and resources for the lesbian and gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth in 18 counties in Western North Carolina. Their vision is to empower LGBTQ youth to be confident, proud, and compassionate while instilling a passion for stewardship in their community and the world. More information at youthoutright.org. Again, you're listening to Asheville FM at WSFMLP 103.3 Asheville. And I am KP Whaley, talking today about education and the way that it has changed in this pandemic, with my two guests this hour, Michelle Vruink of the Franklin School of Innovation and Brady Roachford of Francine Delaney New School for Children. We've been talking about how we've gotten to where we are now. And I believe, Brady, I think it was you who mentioned the digital divide that we see, and talking about equity. You know, we live in a pretty rural area around Asheville, and not everyone has access to high-speed internet or even laptops at home. So what has that meant to your school and to your students?
Mm-hmm. At the beginning, we knew we were going to need to get computers to kids. And so through a survey, we found out, and calling all our families, we have given out, I think now, 83 computers. I just gave one more computer to a student whose computer broke. So 83 Chromebooks to our families who need them. And it's not necessarily due to the digital divide, but some families have two working parents who are going to be using those computers, and then they have a second grader who doesn't have their own computer yet and is going to need something. So and then there is the issue of the digital divide and people not having high-speed internet. And so we purchased 8 hotspots for them to access the internet. And for most of the kids, it's working. And we have We have almost 100% participation in our online lessons. Some families are choosing to opt out, or they're modifying how much of the work they're doing to maintain a priority on the emotional health of their family. But the digital divide is really just sort of represents the socioeconomic divide, you know, mm-hmm. in our country. And I think that this pandemic is making that issue more apparent. We see so many schools across the country providing free food for their students, because I think 20 million American kids receive free or reduced lunch. And so schools are a community hub, and we're continuing to work to be that community hub and provide the resources that our families need.
Yeah. Michelle, how about you at Franklin School?
Yeah, we similarly surveyed. I think it was sort of interesting for that Monday when we were open to allow students to come to school to pick up items and to get Chromebooks. We had done the survey, and I think that we had like 25 or 30 kids say they needed Chromebooks at home. We've distributed over 200 so far, and they keep trickling in. I also had a student just reach out and say, my sister broke my Chromebook. So that continues. And we were able to also provide a lot of support in helping people connect to the free or low-cost internet service in the area. And then for a few students, we did run into, you know, this is a mountainous area, and there's mm-hmm. not access in some areas. So even hotspots don't necessarily mm-hmm. work for some of our more remote students. So then we just literally got on the phone with them and looked at maps of where there would be access for them to go and find a free hotspot, and then made sure that their teachers knew that they might need alternate assignments if they weren't going to have regular consistent access to internet. So, but that was maybe one or two students. Almost everybody else we were able to work with to get them access to internet at home. And then as we've gone through this, we have been continuing to get more requests for devices, because families are all working, you know, in the same space and using the same devices. So we've been handing out more as we go. And the food is another piece too. We've kept our food pantry going. I think that's an area that schools all across the state and probably all across the country have really done so well. And I want to give a big shout out to the district schools who serve such a huge need in our community with the way that they were able to make meals available to all students, whether they attend their schools or not. I think that the state made clear that that was a priority, and everybody really rallied to that. So I think people have done a great job of making sure that those basic needs, that there are things available for families to access, and that's going to continue to become even more essential the longer we're in this economic recession.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are continuing to reach out to families and see what their needs are and how can we provide support, and feel fortunate that we've had the resources that we've needed to meet those things so far.
Yeah. And how have you been able to do that? I'm assuming you didn't budget for 30 Chromebooks to be given to kids. So what is this meant to your schools in terms of the resources that you are now providing that you weren't expecting?
I will say that that's a little area of you just say, this is what our families need right now, and we'll deal with that later. Mm. You know, I know that we know that there's going to be a percentage of those Chromebooks. Those are Chromebooks we use in our classrooms every single day. So this is not like we had 200 and some Chromebooks sitting around that were not essential to us when we return to in-person learning. But that's just one of those things that, you know, it's necessary. It's necessary for students to be able to stay connected right now. And so we'll deal with that loss, and we'll have to figure out how we're going to purchase replacement devices for those that don't come back. But it just that wasn't my top consideration. And so I don't have an answer yet. I don't know how I'm paying for those yet. But I just, like, that wasn't even at the top of my mind. It was like, this is what our families need right now. And so we're gonna do it, and we'll figure out how to pay for it later. And I will say that's an area that I think that those of us in the charter world, we're pretty accustomed to that. We're pretty scrappy about, like, there are areas where we don't receive the same amount of funding as district schools. And so we've had to be really creative from the very beginning. And so I guess that doesn't keep me up at night. There are other things that keep me up at night, but how I'm going to pay for those 200 Chromebooks isn't one of them.
Right. And so again, now, you know, the decision's been made. We're going to remain remote learning for the rest of the year. What's that mean for your academic programs, grading, evaluation, pass or fail, those kinds of things now have to be decided from your kitchen?
Yes. Brady, do you want to talk to that at all?
Well, yeah. So the state has provided recommendations for grading, and they've made it very clear that we're not to penalize students for not doing the work, because it is not equitable, and we don't know what their home situations are. K-5 students, Francine Delaney is a K-8 school, so K-5 students will not receive a final grade, but the teachers will provide some kind of end-of-year feedback, and so we're working right now to figure out what that feedback will look like. And 6-8, it's a little more confusing. I think the state is offering more clarity. There's some webinars that we can attend coming up this week. But it's going to be a pass or a withdraw. And so they're going to be helping us define what that withdraw looks like. But essentially, we're going to be providing information for the next school year, so that when the student enters the next school year, that teacher will know where that student was as of, I believe, March 13th, before the before schools were closed. And I think that the state is talking about assessing the students at the beginning of the year. That's a possibility, to do some kind of formal standardized assessment, so that we can see where students are and gauge the gauge sort of what, if any, damage has been done, what kind of regression may have taken place. So we're still figuring it out. We're getting information, and I think there's going to be some more clarification very soon.
Mm-hmm. And what about the emotional health of people in this time? I think of my senior year, which was some 30 years ago, and I still have, a lot of memories around prom and a lot of memories around, the graduation ceremony. Michelle, you have seniors. What's this like for them?
Yeah. They're mourning, and they should be. You know, they're grieving, and we're grieving with them. They are experiencing a lot of loss. And I see, and I'm sure everybody's heard this, like the little memes that go around on, like, you know, how other generations were asked to give up so much more, and we're just asked to stay home and sit on our couch. And I think that takes away. Like, I do think that without taking anything away from the amazing sacrifices that prior generations made, these kids are making sacrifices right now too, and we need to just honor that and allow that to be heard and experienced and felt. So our seniors have let us know that they really want what they call a regular graduation. They want to walk across a stage. They want their families to be there. They want their teachers to be there. And so we've pushed a date. We're holding a date in late June. If we can do that safely and legally, we will. But we also are going to be really saying, you know, help us plan a celebration. If it has to be virtual, let's honor the things that are really important to you. So we have a small senior class. There's 40 students this year. And so we're able to really work with them very, very closely to come up with what that's going to look like. Right now, they're a little stuck on, like, they want it to be what they envisioned. And so we're having to really give them a little time to process that may or may not be possible, and then how do we create something that's really that really does honor them in a way that they'll have memories that go on. So, and we're looking for, we're doing all kinds of things to try to celebrate them in smaller ways. So that work is underway, and recognizing them on social media and creating videos to share stories with them about how we remember them and all of those kinds of things to build those memories for them and make sure that that this is still a year where we can celebrate all the great work they did before we went into closure, and then recognize the resilience that they've had to have to stay with it and to keep going. The grading is complicated. As Brady said, we have fifth grade through 12th grade, and seniors really early on receive the message that if you were passing as of March 13th, you will pass for the year. And that's the right message, but it does make it complicated in how do you continue to keep kids connected and engaged when that external motivation is really gone for them. And so that, I think that adds to the whole component. And I'm really proud of our seniors for, like, they have not just disappeared on us. They're still coming. And so, I'm proud of them. And I have a lot of personal mourning. A lot of them were with us in the first year that we opened. And so,
it's hard to say goodbye.
It's really hard. We're just trying to hold that space for them and to find ways to have, to really commemorate their experience with us.
Yeah. Brady, you also have eighth graders who at this time would be, graduating-ish and moving on to different high schools. So all these kids that have spent a lot of time with each other now were, you know, overnight spent time at home and away from all these friends, and now they're going to finish out the rest of the year not really being in physical contact. What's that like for them?
Well, I think that's why the conversation came up on Tuesday when we met, yesterday when we met. They're nervous about high school. They're sad. They're mourning not being together anymore, like Michelle said. And like Michelle said, you know, comparative suffering does take away. So we're trying to validate what they're feeling and be innovative with how we can celebrate them, how we could possibly hold some kind of online graduation, but also perhaps hold a date. We're thinking about maybe something in August. Graduation at Francine Delaney for eighth grade is a whole school gathering where each class, K-7, presents a gift to each student who's going to leave the community. And it's my one, it's really my favorite day of the year. And it is a little mind-boggling to think about how we could do that digitally. But we are trying to think of what we can do so that they feel cherished, because it is kind of a rite of passage for them to leave eighth grade. And they do a lot of things to also leave a legacy to the class and to the school. So we're working right now. I feel a little bit, I'm unsure how it's going to look right now. So hopefully we can muster the creativity and the love to create something for them that they'll remember.
Yeah, I'm sure it's really, really tough. All those traditions, kind of having to come to a halt or be reinvented in this virtual world. And I hear it both from both of you in your voice. This is not just a difficult time for students, but it's got to be a difficult and stressful time for teachers too. Not only switching to this, new realm, but also losing that physical connection with your students. So what kind of support are you providing your staff, Michelle? What are you giving them to recognize the fact that this has got to be a completely stressful situation for them?
Yeah. On Friday, when the governor made the announcement, and I think we all knew it was coming, but in the teachers that I interacted with that day and those that I'm on social media with, just seeing the level of grief. So I think that's the first thing, is just acknowledging, it is something to grieve, and it's that's okay. Like, just acknowledging that is really important. And then we've been trying to find ways to embrace some fun, to keep some social connections with our staff. So there are our regular Google Meets. And lately, a few of those have, you know, we're doing some of the same sorts of fun things that we're trying to do for students. There have been, we've been using the Google Meet, you know, when you can see the grid view and it's sort of like Hollywood Squares. So we've been playing Hollywood Squares, like just silly things that, again, create that sense of fun and celebrating together, because that's a big component of being in a social setting with one another and with our students. Just trying to be as present as we can for people, making ourselves available, just having virtual office hours where teachers can check in with one another or check in with any of us, and making sure that they're consistently hearing from us that we recognize the hard work that they're doing every day, and passing along the words of support and encouragement from our families that we're hearing, and making sure that they're hearing those as well. I think that's an important thing that our community can hear too. Teachers are grieving. This is not how they want to be interacting with students. You don't go into teaching just to be providing academic content to kids. You go into teaching because you love kids. Mm-hmm. And so they're really sad right now. And the biggest thing I think that we can do is honor that.
Yeah. Brady, how about you guys? How are you coping with this as peers of teachers?
Yeah, we have Zoom meetings twice a week, and we have two executive council members who are outside of the classroom, Buffy and Jessica, and Jessica leads our Zoom meetings, and she does a beautiful job of making sure that we are checking in, that we are being genuine, that we are revealing really what's going on with us in this process, so that we can adjust and support each other with our expectations, and brainstorm if we need to brainstorm and problem solve. I think that's like one of our best strengths, is that we are a collective body who works together to figure out what is best for kids and what teachers need to provide that. So I feel very supported by my community of teachers. And the message that we're trying to support each other with is that our, you know, the kids' emotional health, families' emotional health comes first, and our emotional health has to come first too, because we're not going to be good to anyone else if we're not taking care of ourselves. And I'd also like to just mention that, you know, there is this anxiety that I'm feeling about not having some kids in my life who I know school provides structure, mm-hmm. It provides routine, it provides loving adults, it provides their role models, you know, so there is a lot of anxiety and worry for those kids. And so we meet with those kids on a daily basis to check in with them, some kids 3 or 4 times a day. So there is connection. And one thing when I think about this time is that being a teacher really provides joy for my life. And I think that it provides all of us with purpose. Right now, when we're home and we kind of don't know what to do with ourselves, at least we have our community that we can keep in touch with and support. And so there's a joy and purpose in being a teacher right now. And we're public servants, you know, and mm-hmm. So I think we're stepping into that role and trying to be some glue in our community that helps all of us.
Yeah, well, I hear it in your voices, and I certainly appreciate the very challenging work that you both do, and I really want to thank you for joining me this hour. Is there last words that you'd want to leave folks with, a little message of hope, and maybe even a nod to next year, the school year, and how that might be a little bit different, Brady?
Next year, I really don't know what it's going to look like. I try to have a deeper vision into the beginning of the school year, it is going to be different. We are going to work fearlessly to try to provide the opportunities for kids who need it, try to provide the support for kids who have experienced, you know, this is going to be traumatic for some kids. So I know we're going to be there for them. And I went to my classroom yesterday, and I can't wait to be back with students in whatever shape that will be. I don't know, but I look forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Michelle? Michelle, you still there? We may have lost her. Well, I will. It's about time to go. Anyway, I want to thank you both again so much for joining me. I certainly appreciate the hour that you've given in light of everything else that you're doing. Michelle Vruink is the executive director of the Franklin School of Innovation, and Brady Rochefort is a teacher at Francine Delaney and on their executive council. Brady, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for giving a time, an hour to education. We appreciate that very much.
Thank you. And I want to remind folks that you're listening to a new show about the pandemic and its local effects. You can tune in next Wednesday. We are going to be talking about another topic. And I also want to remind folks that on Friday mornings at 9 o'clock, we have dedicated that hour to a children's story hour. And so this Friday, Miss Tanya of ArtSpace Charter School will join us again. And she's going to be reading some wolf stories, including the Gunna Wolf, Little Green Riding Hood wolf story, and more. You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville. And programming support is brought to you by Mosaic Realty, a real estate company in Asheville offering virtual walkthroughs of their listings, live stream walkthroughs for buyers, and e-signing contracts. Mosaic helps buyers and sellers navigate their real estate future. More information at mymosaicrealty.com. Stay tuned next. Democracy Now! Is coming up, the award-winning news program featuring Amy Goodman. And the heart of the pandemic in New York City. You'll want to stay tuned to find out the latest news and information from that program. And we have a lot of great programming coming up all day long as well. So stay tuned. And thank you so much for listening. Here at Asheville FM, we will continue to broadcast. We will continue to be here for the community. But we do need your help to stay on air. Businesses you can underwrite. This means we'll run spots on air about your individual business. Individuals can also help by donating. To find out more, contact underwriting at ashevillefm.org. You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. It's Wednesday, April 29th, and stay tuned next. Democracy Now! Is coming up.
At this time of crisis, blackoffbiltmore.com.
From New York City, the epicenter of the pandemic, this is Democracy Now!
The Postal Service is a joke.
What would happen to this country if the Postal Service went out of business?
If the post office were allowed to die, and with this COVID pandemic and its economic impact on the Postal Service, if Congress doesn't step up and the people ensure that Congress steps up, the post office could die.
President Trump lashes out at the U.S. Postal Service as the pandemic brings it to the brink of collapse, while more Americans than ever are relying on the mail. We'll look at the crisis facing the Postal Service with American Postal Workers Union President Mark Dimenstein. We'll also look at how attacks on the Postal Service could also threaten efforts to vote by mail as people are under orders to stay home. Then we look at the impact of the pandemic on schools, universities, students, parents, teachers, and professors, and who's at the table to shape what happens next.
If you're going to consolidate schools, if you're going to start moving teachers around, if you're going to start coming up with like cute experimental teaching techniques, we need to have folks from those communities at the table talking about what will and will not work up front, and not have the billionaires come rush in with a checkbook and say, hey, I've got another experiment I want to try.
We'll speak with education